news, science, the unexplained, space and the cosmos, exploring our past, our future, and the mysteries of our universe. Taking a critical look at reality and a journey to the edges of human understanding. The future is now. This is Micah Hanks.
From the high mountains of Appalachia in a bunker below ground, welcome one and all. It is the Micah Hanks Program, and glad as always to be getting back behind the microphone, getting into gear, and looking ahead as we pursue another week in exploration of the anomalous, like we do every week, listen on demand via podcasting apps all across the globe, and of course via our station affiliates at the UNX Radio Network. Boy, a lot going on over the weekend, huh? Especially those observers down there along the South Carolina coast, where an F-22 Raptor was taking down a suspected Chinese spy balloon. Yeah, we've got a field report from an observer coming up here this week, along with all the latest news, what we know about the incident, and also chiming in this discussion with us will be Space.com editor Brett Tingley, who's also covered defense issues in recent years. He's got a lot to say about this. And how does this relate to UAP and the DoD's ongoing investigations into these anomalies in the sky? Remember, only a few weeks back, and more recently in that ODNI report, the DoD's been saying a lot of incidents involving anomalous aerospace phenomena that we've been looking at are what? That's right, balloon or balloon-like. Now, in this case, of course, when you have a massive balloon with a payload suspended beneath it, roughly the size of three school buses, maybe not all the photos you saw online necessarily conveyed how large this puppy was. I saw a size comparison, in fact. The balloon itself, the diameter of it, at least, was larger than the F-22 Raptor that was sent up there to intercept that thing. I mean, it was quite large indeed, and that's one of the reasons why people right here in my neighborhood in Asheville, North Carolina, were able to see the balloon as it passed overhead. Saturday morning, there were people in my neighborhood within a couple of miles of my house who got photographs out on social media. A lot of people were able to see this thing. It was hard to miss given the clear conditions and the size of the balloon, which, of course, as we'll get into a bit later, China adamantly maintains was only a meteorological device. Well, mainly meteorological, they said. If you go back to the Cold War, we used to say the same thing about our spy planes. When we'd send the piloted U-2 up there, the pilots, of course, wore very nondescript uniforms. They didn't have CIA or Air Force or anything like that on there. And that's because they wanted to be able to create a plausible story that the pilots could tell. We're conducting atmospheric research. Yes, this is a NASA or a NOAA project. This is something that's studying the atmosphere. So that's just one of the many ways that what we've seen in recent days seems to convey shades of the Cold War. So we'll get into all that and much more a little later. First and foremost, I hope you guys are all great. Maybe some of you guys saw the balloon. I'm already getting photos from people, but if anybody out there happens to have any, if you saw this thing as it passed over your location, I'd like to hear from you. info@MicahHanks.com, and you can also, as always, tweet at me at Micah Hanks. So with that, let's get into some news here. The AP reporting that a 50-car train derailment caused a very massive fire, but also some evacuations up there in Ohio near East Palestine. In recent days, as the AP details for us, about 50 cars were derailed. This occurred at about 9 p.m. Eastern time on Friday, as the train was carrying a variety of products from Madison, Illinois, over to Conway, Pennsylvania. A rail operator with Norfolk Southern said that there was no immediate information about what had caused that derailment. Fortunately, no injuries or damage to structures were reported. But there was one heck of a fire, and this, of course, led to evacuations in the surrounding area. I'm just glad to hear that nobody apparently was injured in that incident. In other news, and in light of the ongoing security challenges presented by balloons and at times, what appear to be less conventional objects operating in U.S. airspace, I guess it's no consolation to hear that Russia is saying that its unstoppable nuclear underwater drone is now ready for deployment. Yeah, Vice recently reported on this one, billed as an unstoppable super torpedo, both by Vladimir Putin, but also by some Western news outlets. What they have called the Poseidon is another unknown and unproven Russian weapon. Now, apparently that's the name, by the way, Poseidon, that NATO gave for it. Apparently Russia calls it the Status 6 Oceanic Multipurpose System. It's a new kind of underwater drone, which, according to Vice, is capable of carrying both nuclear and conventional warheads. Now, the TASS news agency, citing an anonymous source, said that the new weapon was finished and would soon be delivered to a Russian submarine. But little is actually known about what this so-called underwater drone, this unstoppable weapon, is actually capable of. Western intelligence does seem to convey that, kind of like the payload dangling under that Chinese balloon over the weekend, it's enormous. That's right, the Status 6 Oceanic Multipurpose System is quite large. It weighs about 200,000 pounds, has a diameter of around 6 feet, and a length of more than 60. So it's big, right? Big enough that the Belgorod, that is the submarine that's going to be carrying it, can only house 6 of these. So it's going to make it the largest torpedo ever developed and deployed, really by anybody, anywhere in the world. But of course, while Russia is deploying its own underwater autonomous systems, right now the U.S. Department of Defense is quietly launching a new program of its own. But this, of course, is going to involve the ability to unleash what many call the Holy Grail of modern defense systems, and that involves thousands of autonomous land, sea, and air drones capable of overwhelming and dominating an enemy's area defenses. If you want to read all about this, Tim McMillan over there, my good buddy and co-founder with thedebrief.org, he covered this for us over there on Friday in an article that tells you everything you need to know about what the Pentagon is currently trying to cook up as far as drone swarms. Tim tells us that details of the project are largely shrouded in secrecy, but in recent updated pre-solicitation documents appearing online, the development of massive autonomous vehicle system swarms likely has a specific focus, and that involves deterring and defeating a potential Chinese invasion of Taiwan. Now, there are a lot of experts who are very cautious to say that China is likely to do this, but as I pointed out, and in fact I've written about this in the intelligence brief, the weekly newsletter we send out every week there at the Debrief, if you read the latest China military power report that the Department of Defense released, that's one of the main focuses. China has been exercising its ability to essentially capture an island. What would they be using that kind of capability for? Yeah. If nothing else, I always look at this two ways. One, there is the operational sense of what they're trying to do and its effectiveness. Then there is, of course, the message that is sent. We want world powers, namely the United States, to know that we are working on this. Because that, kind of like sending a giant balloon into airspace over another country, sends a very specific message. But if you want to read all about what Tim has learned about the Pentagon's use of autonomous swarms, multi-domain drones, and their potential use to dominate enemy defenses, head on over to thedebrief.org. As always, I'll have all this linked in the show notes, so you can find links to all of the stories and other content that we cover on the program here every week, right there, from the convenience of your podcasting app of choice. Although I will say, if you're an email person like I am, you might want to sign up for that newsletter over there at the website also, because that gets it delivered directly to your inbox each week. You won't miss a thing, including all the extra new podcasts that The Debrief has begun to produce, because in addition to our flagship show, Rebelliously Curious, hosted by Chrissy Newton, which has long been on YouTube, you can now get the audio version of that. You can also get MJ Banias and Stephanie Girk's new Debrief Weekly Report, which is a news summary podcast. And if you're on the go, you haven't got time to read the articles we publish, you can get an overview from MJ and Stephanie. And then, of course, as always, the Micah Hanks program will also be made available there on thedebrief.org in the days ahead, because we're going to be integrating all of our podcasting properties to make sure that you guys have multiple ways to engage with the content we produce. Now, getting back into news here, it's time we take a turn for the weird. Tim McMillan, during our weekly meetings, is always talking about how the criteria we have for our company and the people that we like working with is, you got to be one of the Goonies. You guys remember that film? I loved that when I was a kid. And although we often reference that during team meetings, albeit lightheartedly, some folks seem to take it a little more seriously. The AP, for instance, reporting here that a man who was saved in recent days by a Coast Guard rescue swimmer at the mouth of the Columbia River. And this after a massive wave rolled the yacht that he'd been piloting late last week. He apparently was wanted for a bizarre incident. That's right, and that involved the aforementioned film. Police said that he left a dead fish at the Astoria, Oregon home featured in the classic 1985 film. Yeah, I mean, this is when you take your fandom a little too far. According to the AP's report, the officers in question had been looking for the man since last Wednesday, when an acquaintance alerted him to a video he posted on social media of himself leaving the fish at the house and then dancing around the property before leaping back into his yacht. I guess one might say that rather than merely being a wave, karma might have had something to do with rolling that guy's yacht, if you believe in that. That's what you get for placing dead fishes on people's property and then dancing around and making videos of it. Probably not a very smart thing to do. Here's a controversial one. The Guardian reporting in recent days that the scientist who says he edited babies' genes believes he acted too quickly. And he's now, of course, at the heart of a scandal involving the world's first gene-edited babies. Hei Yang-Ku sent shockwaves across the world, according to The Guardian, when he announced in 2018 he had edited the genes of two twin girls, Lulu and Nana. Before birth, he was subsequently sacked by his university in Shenzhen, and thereafter, of course, was also sentenced to 3 years in prison. He was broadly condemned by the scientific community for having gone ahead with this ethically contentious and also a overall risky and medically unjustified procedure without complete consent from the families that were involved. And so when he spoke with The Guardian in recent days, he says having had 3 years in prison, and thereby a lot of time to contemplate what he did, he said, "I did it too quickly." That's how he summarizes it. But he doesn't apologize. He says, "I need more time to think about whether what I did was wrong. That is a complicated question." What do you think about that? I mean, is it right for a scientist to edit the genes of infants without complete consent of family members? And not only that, of course, at this current stage in the development of this science, with all the questions that remain about it, I mean, most in fact, in the academic community would say, no, this is not something he should have done. What do you guys think about that? info@MicahHanks.com. And of course, as always, you can tweet at me @MicahHanks. I'd like to hear from you. And of course, if you have anything else you want to share, including any clear pictures of that balloon being taken down, which I have received a few already. In fact, I'm going to try and post some of those online with permission of an individual who will be joining us here in just a few minutes, who was on hand and observed this firsthand as it all went down. Meanwhile, though, a little further south down in Dallas, where I stopped in recent days on my way back from New Mexico, where I was visiting the home of the largest collection of UFO records anywhere in the nation, and that currently in the possession of Mr. David Marler. A little east of where David is, over in Dallas, a man was arrested recently. He's been accused of taking two monkeys from the Dallas Zoo, and this associated with a mysterious string of events that police say are also linked to the escape of a small leopard and also a gash in the fence of another monkey habitat. However, officials say they don't know what led this man to kidnap these monkeys. Davian Irvin, who was arrested Thursday, they say has been charged with 6 counts of animal cruelty and 2 counts of burglary. That's right. According to authorities, we do believe that Irvin was looking to commit another crime, but they still don't know exactly why he was pursuing these monkeys. Boy, talk about strange news. Moving from the animal kingdom and off into worlds unknown, and whether or not life exists there. Mark Brady, longtime correspondent of the program, sent me this article from Voice of America, which features a lot of interesting perspectives on the quest in search of alien life and whether it exists, and of course also touches a bit on UFO sightings. They quote one man here, Nicholas Rehack of Baltimore County, Maryland, who said, "The object he observed was shaped in a damn near perfect oval, and it started to rise. I'm talking straight up vertical, no deviation." He said it sat there for nearly 30 seconds, then suddenly just vanished like a lamp when someone pulls the plug. Just sudden darkness. Indeed, this article features several similar sightings and also perspectives. Another interesting one here, they quote a Mr. Steve Mort of New Orleans, Louisiana, It's no longer embarrassing to talk about, he says. I've always known true extraterrestrial UAPs exist. But wait, listen to this. He says they're likely our ancestors checking back in on us. The only thing I'm shocked by, Mr. Mort added, is that the government is officially confirming this. I don't think the government has confirmed that our ancestors are checking back in on us. What does he mean by that, by the way? Is he saying that a previous instance of intelligent life that came to pass here on planet Earth at some point long, long ago, and maybe went off planet, that is the source behind UAP and that they're coming back to check on us? Is he saying that UAP represent vessels that contain spirits of the dead? I don't know. I mean, we can only speculate. I'd really like further clarification from Mr. Mort, what he actually thinks. They also quote Neil deGrasse Tyson here. He says, if there's something in your night sky and you don't know what it is, maybe it's harmful, right? Well, investigating that potential harm is the entire mission statement of the military. Tyson there, of course, referring to Arrow, and he's right. Again, when folks say there is no threat posed by UAP, end the threat narrative, welcome the Space Brothers. No, as we've seen in recent days with this Chinese balloon, whether or not they say it was a meteorological airship, again, U.S. intelligence officials believe it was probably conducting surveillance, considering how it hovered around Montana and Malmstrom Air Force Base, which has its own unique history of involvement with the UAP question. But again, Mr. Tyson is correct in the sense that in the broader scope of what the military's interest in UAP entails, hey, if anything is invading our airspace, we want to know about it. We want to assess any potential national security challenges that may emanate from it. But Mr. Tyson ends with that. He says it's nothing deeper than that, according to the VOA article. Other than there are many people out there who wish it was something deeper, despite having a lack of evidence to prove it. They cite a Pew Research Center poll from June of 2021 where they said that 65% of Americans at that time said that they believe intelligent life does exist on other planets. The question, yet again, though, would be, does any UAP that we observe in our airspace right here on Earth represent that intelligent life? Maybe there isn't necessarily a connection. They quote Robert Schaefer. He's a guy I have spoken with in the past, a noted skeptic, but the quote from Mr. Schaefer in the VOA article is quite interesting. He says, each time we build a bigger telescope, we discover more and more galaxies in our ever-expanding universe. Our universe is so unimaginably vast, it would be foolish to claim that there are no planets with life or with intelligent civilizations. A rather open-minded statement from Robert Schaefer, but again, let's be clear, while he's open to those positions, he is resolutely against the idea that UAP represent anything other than fairly mundane objects, misidentifications, and what have you. But I also noticed that at the very tail end of this article, I was happy to see a local connection. They include the following quote here, UAPs can be anything, according to Emily Songster, a music teacher in Asheville, North Carolina. But imagining the possibility of life on other planets coming to visit us makes for a more fun and interesting world. Emily says, I think that's why many people look to aliens for answers, and personally, I'm glad we're beginning to officially take these things seriously. Very well said, Emily. It is a little interesting that they're quoting a music teacher on this issue, but nonetheless, I actually agree with her positions. Very well said. What do you guys think? In the broader discussion about UAP, where or does the question of alien life and its existence elsewhere out there fit into the entire equation? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Again, info@MicahHanks.com, and you can tweet at me @MicahHanks. But when we come back after this, I've got to provide an update on what's been going on in recent days in U.S. airspace involving a suspected Chinese spy balloon. Yeah, lots to cover here. That and much more awaits when we return here in a moment on the Micah Hanks program. Incursions into U.S. airspace, and this time not by anomalous aerospace vehicles. Now, this one appeared to be a good old-fashioned balloon and with a fairly large payload. Welcome back. It is the Micah Hanks Program. Glad, as always, to be providing news and views for all you guys out there. I do want to mention, by the way, of course, Monday morning we dropped an article over there at thedebrief.org with a few details about the latest developments regarding this strange balloon scare. You know, some have likened this to, Cold War-style stuff. And maybe the closest that we have come to a true diplomatic crisis in recent memory. In fact, some are already calling it that. Yeah, we aren't close. This was a full-scale diplomatic crisis. And China, rather paradoxically, has responded to all this with anger. Yeah, they're saying that the United States are the aggressors by shooting the thing down. Which, by the way, is nonsense. If you head over there to thedebrief.org, and I have this linked in the show notes, but you can read my entire update on all that, why this was clearly out of step with international law, and why the United States was well within its rights to act the way that it did. Actions which, of course, have also been supported by Canada and other nations. But, essentially, here is what we now know about the incident as it unfolded. On Saturday morning, the U.S. Air Force dispatched an F-22 Raptor, which, with a single shot, as I understand it, took down the suspected Chinese spy balloon. We actually have audio of radio communications from one of those aircraft.
Break one. Blast one. TOI one.
Just copy. Splash.
That is a T-kill. The balloon is completely destroyed.
So what brought us to this point? Apparently earlier in the week, civilian passengers on board an aircraft observed the balloon. However, although it hadn't been made public at that point, as early as Tuesday, this was thought to have been one of many similar aerial incursions along the coastal areas of North America where a balloon had been noticed. Normally, they don't actually make their way over the mainland. But on Tuesday, this one, first noticed out there close to Idaho, appeared to be doing just that. It was kind of lingering over Montana, which, of course, is the home to Malmstrom Air Force Base. So at that time, President Biden was clued in on the fact, hey, Mr. President, we have a balloon over one of our sensitive military facilities out there in Montana. At that time, President Biden reportedly said, shoot it down. But apparently, according to sources who spoke with the AP and other agencies who were familiar with this situation, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin and others had apparently advised the president, listen, the payload on this thing is pretty large. Remember me mentioning it was about the size of three buses? Quite large indeed. Large enough that according to the DOD, if we shoot it down, it could cause damage. It could also result in, potentially at least, the loss of human life. So they said, really right now what we've got to try and do is monitor this thing, go and alert China that we have found a balloon of theirs, and we're going to wait until this thing is no longer a threat to anything below it, and then we'll shoot it down, which is what occurred on Saturday morning, as you heard in that audio. But since this occurred, China has responded rather strangely, I must say. They have called it indiscriminate use of force, the U.S. taking down its balloon, which they adamantly maintain had been, and I quote this according, by the way, to a statement released by the country's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. They said it was a civilian airship used for research, mainly meteorological purposes. Keyword mainly. Remember what I said about back during the Cold War. You always want to have a cover story. It very well may be that they were collecting some weather data as they were hovering over Malmstrom Air Force Base and the surrounding region. It very likely could be that there were weather instruments on board that, but maybe that's not the only purpose that this balloon might have had. You got to take into consideration that balloons are an interesting kind of technology to use for this sort of thing. Although satellites have been the standard for many decades, let's face it, a satellite is in space, and even equipped with the kinds of camera technologies that they have, a balloon at a lower altitude and within Earth's atmosphere may at times be able to get even clearer pictures due to proximity. But at that 60,000-foot altitude that this balloon was operating, it's also high enough that most aircraft can't get up there and reach it. Because they move so slowly, and apparently based on what Pat Ryder had said, we've got an audio soundbite about that as well. Let me get that one in here, because Pat Ryder clarified late last week that this was no ordinary balloon. It wasn't just drifting along. Apparently, it was also maneuvering.
It's moving eastward, and it's over the continental U.S. It's not over Montana anymore. Is the Chinese government controlling the movement of the balloon, or is it just floating with airstreams?
Thanks, Jennifer. So I'm not going to go into any specific intelligence that we may have. Again, we know this is a Chinese balloon and that it has the ability to maneuver, but I'll just leave it at that.
So despite how little he said there, Pat Ryder seems to confirm, yes, this object is being maneuvered. And when you've got a balloon at 60,000 feet that can be maneuvered and it isn't moving as quickly as aircraft do, one of the other things that's important here is that it's less easily detectable on radar. That's right. So another advantage of using a balloon involves the fact that radar may not easily detect it. Of course, visually, this thing was sticking out like a sore thumb, hence why passengers on board a civilian aircraft saw it. And even a few people in my neighborhood, right here in North Carolina, managed to photograph it as it passed over our houses at approximately 8:50 a.m. on Saturday morning on its way down toward the coast, where it would eventually meet oblivion at the hands of these F-22 Raptors. But one more thing that's important to keep in mind about a balloon like this, because a lot of people are saying, you know, in this era of drones and satellites, why in the heck would you use a balloon? Think about the millions of dollars that go into the development of the kinds of space programs capable of launching rockets that can carry satellites and other payload into space. Think about the at least hundreds of thousands of dollars alone that might go into the development of a spy satellite. I mean, sometimes it just comes down to the economics of the situation, and in this case, a balloon with a dangling observation deck, or whatever that thing was, it's been referred to by many names, we don't really know exactly what it was, and Pentagon sources are kind of back and forth on that. Some are saying, oh, we're probably not going to gain a whole lot of information about it, but keep in mind, the U.S. Navy and the Coast Guard were cordoning off the area where the debris crashed into the ocean there off Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Obviously, they are gathering that debris and intend to analyze it and find out indeed what they can about what China was indeed using it for. But again, if you can send a balloon up, the sum total cost might be, oh, I don't know, tens or at most maybe hundreds of dollars minus the cost of the payload dangling underneath it. Instead of having to use rocket fuel or having to have a launch facility to get that thing up there, no, you use good old-fashioned air. You use the time-tested technology that balloon aviators have used since well before the Wright brothers first flew at Kitty Hawk. That's right. I mean, it's an inexpensive way to get surveillance technologies up into the air. The only real problem is that indeed, even if radar doesn't spot it very easily, they ran the obvious risk of visual detection. And apparently that occurred pretty early on, because even before the U.S. public knew about it, that's right, President Biden, as I mentioned, had been briefed on Tuesday. And I'll have a little more to say about that a bit later. We're also going to be joined by Brett Tingley of Space.com, who's going to weigh in on this, and also similar technologies. What other kinds of blimp or balloon-like technologies China has been developing in recent days? First, before we get into all that and additional commentary, I want to bring into the program right now my friend Martin Willis, host of the podcast UFO program, who was actually down there on the scene when all this unfolded. And so coming to us live from down there in the state of South Carolina, Martin Willis, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking me on. It's just so ironic how this thing happened. A friend of mine was looking at properties, and we stopped at this location. I had no idea. I hadn't been listening to the news. I was out to sea for a while. So I've been away from the news, and but I did hear about the Chinese balloon, and so I stepped out of the car, and the realtor says, "Hey, look at that! That's the Chinese balloon up there, the spy balloon." So I'm looking up. I said, "Yeah, it looks just like it." He goes, "No, it is it."
Oh my
and
gosh!
So I turned on my camera. And I couldn't believe it. I turned on my camera, and the jet was heading toward it. And poof. Now I got some still shots exactly when it was hit. But the video was just before and just after. It's too bad I didn't have the video running the whole time, but still, it was pretty exciting. It felt very historic just to happen to be right there. I mean, I'm talking, I was out of my car for just a couple of minutes when this happened.
I mean,
I had no idea the balloon was there.
Yeah. I mean, that couldn't have worked out better. I mean, I actually saw some of the images that you post on social media. And of course, Martin has sent those to me. So I'll try and link where you can see these online, his firsthand perspective on all this. But now at the time that you stepped out of the vehicle, Martin, and you see the balloon up there in the sky, and, you know, your associate saying, oh, yeah, look, there it is. And you're like, yeah, that looks just like the balloon. I mean, it hadn't dawned on you at that moment, right, that you were looking at the same balloon that's been all over the news the last few days.
Yeah, until he said, no, that's it. You know, like, I couldn't believe it. And I said, yeah, it's round just like the balloon. And he said, no, it is the balloon. Because I'd been away from the news, I had no idea it had drifted, you know, over South Carolina.
Yeah. You know, right here where I am in North Carolina, it went right over my house that morning. I didn't see it, but I was getting tweets from people. I was getting messages from Brett Tingley at space.com, who we'll hear from a little later. And Brett also was saying, man, if we'd been up early enough this morning, you would have been able to see that thing from your front porch while you're having your coffee. Now, the other side of this, though, too, is where I was at that time. And from my vantage point, I wouldn't have seen jets coming in to shoot this thing down out there off the coast of South Carolina. But you happened to be yet again at the right place at the right time. So in a portion of your video, you can see this jet coming in toward the balloon. Is that right?
That's right. It was coming in, and that's when I stopped the video, unfortunately, and started taking still pictures. But it hadn't dawned on me that they were actually going to shoot it. I had no idea that was going to happen. Otherwise, I would have left the film running. But I just happened to, I was be snapping still pictures when it got hit. So yeah, I was pretty excited about that. And I didn't hear a thing. I couldn't hear the jet. Now, this thing, this balloon was up, as you know, 60,000 feet. So, of course, the missile had to fire up because the jet wouldn't have been that high. You couldn't really tell, but it popped well before the jet got there. So, in other words, it was being sent out at an upward angle, I'm sure, and in forward of the jet itself. And I didn't hear a single thing. The realtor was on the phone with someone that was close. We were only a mile from the beach, so we were about 7 miles away. And then again, it was 60,000 feet up. And so I didn't hear a thing, but the person at the beach the realtor was on the phone with did hear the boom, but we couldn't hear it where we were at.
Wow. That's just incredible. And again, you know, for folks listening at home, as this was unfolding, Martin didn't even know that there was going to be a jet coming in. And in the footage that you posted, I can overhear you say at one point, oh, look, they're coming in to look at the balloon. So presumably,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you were under the impression they were coming in to try and, you know, observe it. But of course, this is the shoot down right here that was underway.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just think it's so ironic. I always say at the end of every show, keep your eyes to the sky. And just happened to be there at this very moment. You know, really, I was out of the car for 2 minutes when the balloon gets shot. So yeah, I feel very fortunate.
That's unbelievable. And I'm assuming you're going to be talking about this some on a forthcoming episode of Podcast UFO, right?
Yes. I can't keep my mouth shut about it. You're right.
I tell you, this is just incredible. And of course, folks, if you haven't listened to his podcast, I'm sure most of you out there probably have by now, because Martin's been in the business for many, many years, but it's one of the best podcasts on the subject that is available. And Martin, tell folks where they can find that online.
Well, it's live on YouTube. I do it live on the platform of YouTube. People can watch it there. It's under Martin Willis Live Shows, but you can get to anything, my blogs and through my website, and the podcast is on any platform out there for podcasting, but it's podcastufo.com. And the show is simply called Podcast UFO. I know it's backwards, but it was what the URL was available at the time. So
that makes plenty of sense. And I tell you again, he's also our roving reporter this week who was on hand and who has provided firsthand imagery of this balloon shoot down. So Martin Willis, thank you very much for jumping on the Micah Hanks program and giving us this report from the field.
You bet. Thank you very much for having me on.
Again, very special thanks to Martin Willis. I tell you, right place at the right time, huh? Maybe if I'd been up a little earlier, I would have been in the right place, but still wouldn't have been able to see that shoot down. Glad we've got Martin Willis reporting from the field and giving us all the details. And of course, we'll have those images linked online. But we'll be continuing our analysis and how this relates to the UAP debate When we come back here in a moment on the Micah Hanks program. Unexpected maneuverability, that at least according to U.S. officials who have spoken about this strange spy balloon affair. Welcome back. It is the Micah Hanks program. I do want to take a moment to remind you, if you aren't already a subscriber to this program, it's easy, it's fun, and of course that gets you weekly additional content, and it's a great way to show support for your friendly neighborhood podcaster. You can sign up via the link I include right there in the show notes, or, of course, over there at MicahHanks.com/podcast, which, by the way, is where you can find all of the back catalog of this program. So here in a few moments, I want to bring in Brett Tingley of Space.com, who's also going to weigh in on the strange affair that has occurred, the diplomatic crisis that has ensued in recent days. First, I do want to mention a couple more articles that have touched on all of this in recent days. One over there at Scientific American by Sophie Bushwick, which was talking about the strange maneuverability of this balloon. According to Bushwick, its maneuverability is beyond the capabilities of most high-altitude balloons, that according to John Villasenor, a professor at the University of California, Los Angeles. Apparently, he says, the only balloons I've heard of are the ones that can go up and down, or the ones that don't do anything. They just completely are at the mercy of winds. But he said the phrasing from these spokespeople, referring to the Pentagon spokespeople, that is, seems to suggest some greater degree of control than that. Villasenor also said, I don't know what that means, but I think it's notable. It adds some more complexity to the whole thing. Now, although China had said that this was merely a balloon used to study weather, apparently, the Weather Channel also weighed in on this. They said this balloon clearly differs from your standard weather balloon, a point which Bushwick also touches on in her article there at Scientific American. First, she says, it has been airborne for days, but weather balloons typically remain up for only a couple of hours. The Chinese balloon is also roughly the size of three buses, whereas weather balloons typically expand to only about 20 feet across. Yeah, the balloon itself was quite large, but again, even the payload beneath it was quite large, which, yet again, I will say, is quite different from the usual payload carried by weather balloons, which are quite small. The Scientific American article goes on to mention, according to Professor Villasenor, that the object, quote, can be controlled, but he said, let me be more careful about what I mean by that. Balloons go with the wind, and so the only control that a balloon has is that in some balloons you can control the altitude. You can make it go higher or lower. To the extent that the wind speed and direction varies with altitude, you can change the altitude within some limits. And that can give you some measure of control, but not anywhere near the level of control that you have with an airplane. He said you can't turn around, you can't go in other directions, you can never go upwind in the balloon, you're always going to be moving with the atmosphere that surrounds it. So the question here seems to be one of whether or not this object was actually moving against prevailing wind patterns. Right now, the Pentagon hasn't really said a whole lot about that, although there have been insinuations that it appeared to be lingering somewhat in its passing over Montana, which would have been a site of strategic importance. Meanwhile, over there at Vice, in recent days, Matthew Gault and Jason Kabler, of course, had to do a write-up tying this in with what they characterize as the Pentagon's UFO obsession. That's right, they say the Pentagon has used the possibility of unidentified aerial phenomena being secret Chinese or Russian spycraft to push for more military funding. The fact is, though, they say, many of these UAPs that the government and private pilots have reported over the years are balloons, according to reports that claim to have categorized some of the sightings. This means that there are balloons of unknown provenance floating in American airspace all the time. Case in point, by the way, as we've learned in recent days, not only had Canada been investigating a suspected second balloon that it believed may have invaded its airspace, right now, there is another balloon over Latin America that China has also said is one of theirs. Earlier in the Biden presidency, it was learned that there was another similar balloon incident, but that one apparently involved a balloon that remained out there close to the coast. It didn't come over the contiguous 48 like this one did in recent days. And it's now also been learned that during the Trump administration, apparently at least, three similar incidents involving suspected Chinese spy balloons apparently occurred. And to me, none of this is surprising. I mean, obviously, use of balloons involves just one of the ways that China is engaged in spying on the U.S. Others already cited include drones and spy satellites. Some of those drone incidents, no doubt, also come into question when we think back to the wording that appeared in the most recent installment of the ODNI's reports on UAP. That's right, they say balloon and balloon-like objects, or UAS and UAS-like objects. So basically, they're saying that a lot of things that we haven't identified, but which some military personnel have encountered, do resemble balloons and unmanned aerial systems. As Kepler and Galt say over there in their Vice article, Congress has tasked the Pentagon with investigating hundreds of reports of unidentified aerial phenomena and has uncovered hundreds of sightings. The Chinese balloon floating over Montana points to what might be the most plausible explanation for the recent rash of sightings. In its initial report on UAPs, the Pentagon noted that UAP probably lack a single explanation, although they also note that one UAP was probably airborne clutter, specifically a deflating balloon. Again, not necessarily surprising. But at this point, as we continue our coverage of all this, I'd like to bring in my pal Brett Tingley. He is an editor at space.com and also a past reporter at websites like The War Zone, where he has covered similar incidents involving unusual aerial incursions into U.S. airspace. Welcome to the program, Mr. Brett Tingley. How are you?
Doing great, man. I'm getting more and more used to the elevator ride down to the bunker here. It's not as scary as it used to be.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, of course, especially since you are the spaceman these days and spend most of your time up there at altitude. So I appreciate you with your schedule right now joining me here on the program. What is your general take on this whole thing with the Balloon Gate 2023?
Man, it was wild. What a wild couple of days there. I mean, you know, as somebody who reports on this kind of stuff, we're always like, you know, getting comment from people on background or off the record. And we kind of get hints that these things are going on. So to finally see one right there up in the sky above Asheville, North Carolina, home to both you and I, it was wild. That's the only way I could describe it. It was a wild week. And, you know, I can't think of anything in recent memory that has kind of captivated the nation like this. As I just mentioned, you know, intelligence matters are usually kind of quiet on the background, but this was something everybody could look up in the sky and see.
Yeah, and speaking of civilian intelligence matters, I woke up Saturday morning to messages from Brett, who was sending me social media posts from people who had seen this thing directly over my neighborhood and passing over greater Western North Carolina. A lot of people saw this. And that's one of the important points here. I strongly suspect, based on the intelligence that has been gathered and what Pentagon officials have said about this incident, of course, now it coming to light that there were at least three from the past administration, during the Trump administration, these things were happening. It's evident to me that in this instance, what's different is, namely, civilians saw it, they photographed it, the media was covering it, it was the biggest story all weekend, and really one of the biggest stories in terms of international relations in recent days. That really makes it for a different dynamic. The Pentagon had to come out and talk about it. China, of course, resolutely denying that it's what the Pentagon says that it was, but basically U.S. officials couldn't hide it, and they had to talk about it. But this is a example of something that seems to have been ongoing for a long time. Case in point, back in February 2022, you and Ty Rogaway over there at the War Zone reported on F-22s being scrambled to investigate a high-altitude balloon off the coast of Hawaii.
That's right. And if you look at videos and images of that incident, it looks remarkably similar to the videos and images we saw this week of one over the United States. Of course, back then in February 2022, we didn't have anybody coming out and admitting that it was their balloon. Anytime you see any kind of reconnaissance or surveillance going on in the Pacific, you can assume it's likely Chinese, right? But, you know, at the time, we didn't have the Chinese Foreign Ministry issuing a statement about this one. So that's what's been very remarkable about this most recent one. But as you mentioned, you know, off the coast of Hawaii is very different than floating entirely across the continental United States and Canada.
Yeah, they really had some chutzpah sending that thing right over the contiguous 48. I mean, have you gathered any intel or have you spoken with anybody who has any perspectives on exactly what this device that was dangling beneath this balloon, estimated to be about 3 school buses in length, you know, what this actually might have entailed? Could it have actually been, in part, weather apparatus maybe as part of the cover story for what they were actually doing?
Oh, I'm sure there could have been some meteorological sensing devices on it. But there's no reason for a weather balloon to be that size and or to have that many solar arrays on it, right? With solar arrays of that size, you have to assume that there's some fairly sophisticated sensing equipment aboard this balloon that floated over. I saw the Pentagon briefing. It was on background the other day with 2 unnamed officials. I read the transcript, and they're very careful not to say what types of sensors were aboard this Chinese craft. And it might be that they don't know until they recover the wreckage and examine it. However, you know, there were some Air Force and NORAD surveillance aircraft of our own following the Chinese balloon, you know, throughout its entire course across the United States with, I'm sure, some very sophisticated sensors pointed right back at it. So yeah. I'm sure they have an idea of what it was looking for or listening for up there. You know, as a lot of people have pointed out, satellites overhead can provide persistent imagery just as well as a balloon can. However, something much lower like this balloon, which was anywhere between 50 and 75,000 feet, can collect signals intelligence and electronic intelligence. So it can pick up communications on the ground potentially, or it can pick up radar waveforms that are being beamed at it from those Air Force and NORAD aircraft. So, you know, if it was indeed a surveillance balloon, as the Pentagon alleges, and as it most likely was, based on its configuration, it was probably looking for or listening for something very different than just, you know, imagery, because, again, they can get those from satellites.
Absolutely. That's a really important point that Brett Tingley of Space.com just made, and I want to touch on that again here for a moment. Unlike a satellite, because I've seen many in the media saying in recent days, come on, guys, I mean, satellites have been the standard for many decades. Why go back to the 18th century and launch a balloon? Well, first of all, I mean, they're cheap, they're effective. You don't have to rely on rocket fuel to get that thing up there. But like you mentioned, signals intelligence. I mean, when you are within Earth's atmosphere, that presents a unique capability in terms of not just visual, but other kinds of information you can collect, right?
That's right. Also, with something much lower than low Earth orbit, as this platform was, you can get different types of imagery if it was, you know, designed to gather imagery. A satellite has a very fixed angle as it goes overhead. It has a very short window to image something, but a much more persistent stratolite, as they call them, a stratospheric satellite, which this that airship belongs to that class. It can take images from different angles, or it can take images over a longer time period. So there are some advantages to having stratolites for imaging, but again, you know, a lot of the analysis I've seen is that it probably wasn't there just doing photographic reconnaissance and surveillance. Because again, if you look at China's launch statistics over the past year or two, I mean, you know, I think they launched over 60 rockets last year, maybe over 50, I'd have to look it up, but they're putting spy satellites in orbit all the time. The Yaogan constellation of remote sensing satellites. So we know they have advanced surveillance capabilities from space. So whatever this balloon was designed to do, it had to be something different, much more specialized, or perhaps, as a lot of people have said, maybe this balloon was meant to just send a message.
Ah, yes, indeed. But the question, of course, is what is that message? I think my guest, Brett Tingley, editor at space.com, just made a very important point. And I want to pick that up here when we come back after this. What is the message behind the recent spy balloon flying over the United States sent here by China? We're going to look at that with Brett Tingley and much more when we return here on the Micah Hanks Program. Welcome back. Continuing our conversation this week on the Micah Hanks program with Brett Tingley of Space.com, who's weighing in on this affair involving the Chinese airship. At least that's what they call it. Everybody else has called it a spy balloon. But where we left off in the last segment there, Brett, you were talking about the message that's being conveyed. And I think that's a very valid point, by the way. In fact, to that point, recently over there in our debrief chat, Tim McMillan and I were talking about this the other day. And he was essentially saying, you know, this was a pretty bold move by China. Even if they denied what its purpose was, I mean, the obvious message seems to be, we're going to do this and we're going to do so with impunity. And then when you shoot our balloon down over your airspace, we're going to criticize you guys for that. Now, I frankly think that that's absurd. And I think that it's a clear violation of international law. There are international law scholars who have weighed in on this point. China are the only ones right now, really, who look bad. But nonetheless, I think you're absolutely correct in the sense that there is a clear message they are attempting to convey. Now, Brett, some others are also talking about the possible relationship involving the current efforts of the All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. Because, again, if we go up and we look at the report from 2022, which didn't come out until 2023, but nonetheless, this being the first ODNI report under the tenure of Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, this report says that many of the objects that have been studied and that currently Aero is evaluating are balloon or balloon-like. Now, some would say, is this an example of that? I'm not so sure that it necessarily is the best representation of some of the truly anomalous kind of aerial events that the DOD is currently working with, but I would say this. I would say that this certainly gives us an idea of what some of those are and certainly would fall within the purview of the kind of national security challenges that the DOD faces. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's right. What was it? 163 of their reports ended up being categorized as balloons or balloon-like entities. I hope I have that number right. I have no idea of the extent to which Aero has looked into these alleged other incidents of Chinese spy balloons, because obviously you and I, we don't have access to the classified portion of that report. Politico put out a piece on Sunday, February 5th, which I think is very interesting, and I'll quote it here. At lower levels, officials have tracked multiple instances of balloon activity over U.S. territories in recent years. One of the Trump-era balloons hovered over Guam, according to two U.S. officials. And in 2020, the intelligence community assessed that much smaller balloons detected off the coast of Virginia were Chinese radar jamming devices, according to a former senior Department of Defense official.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you think about some of the reports we've heard from pilots like Lieutenant Ryan Graves, who I know you have spoken with before, and they describe seeing these balloons, but let me back up there, balloon-like entities,
yes.
Right? Cubes inside spheres off the coast of Virginia. So I think some of the overlap in language there is quite interesting. In reference to that Guam reference there, we know that the war zone, where I used to report, reported on a case of drones being spotted over one of the air defense batteries, the terminal high altitude air defense batteries in Guam, which is a very sensitive air defense asset. So again, there's a lot of overlap in the language that these defense officials are using to describe this Chinese case with other past drone incursions and with some of the stuff that Aero is looking at. So we have to assume that at least some of the cases Aero has looked at could fall into this category of Chinese surveillance balloons or perhaps another foreign powers surveillance balloons. But again, we're all just guessing because we haven't seen this classified portion.
Yeah, you know, things are always pretty one-dimensional when it comes to the way that they try to relate to the UAP question. When we're looking at UAP, many would say, oh, all these objects must be mundane. Then there are those who say, well, those aren't the kind of UAP we're talking about. We're talking about the spacecraft from other worlds. Yeah. I think personally, and you and I have talked about this, that in order to fully understand comprehensively UAP and the United States military's relationship to it, we have to extend that to the study of drones, even balloon-like or UAS-like phenomena, as the wording in the report seemed to characterize them. All these things have to be looked at so that in the sum total of the assessment and analysis of what broadly the military now calls UAP, we have an understanding of all of its dynamics and what the varieties of different things that the military encounters might represent. I mean, this is an instance where there is something that is a national security challenge that is plainly visible in the skies over the United States. We saw, of course, many people, and I think there were a lot of politicking going on there, but people were criticizing the U.S. for not taking down the thing swiftly enough. It seems pretty evident based on, and this was reported late last week, even though I'm seeing people on Twitter losing their minds, I mean, Lloyd Austin and General Milley and others had been saying to the president, right now we're concerned that something the size of three buses, if it falls from the sky, it could cause injury. Let's wait until it's out over the coast, then we'll shoot it down, which is exactly what they did. And yet it's really been made into politics. If anything, it's all about politics. And now it's turned into he said, she said. Well, this happened years ago during the Trump administration, too. More broadly, it seems that what we are looking at is the ongoing aerial surveillance of the United States. And quite obviously, there are many instances where this has happened that simply weren't reported. But I mean, it seems a no-brainer to me that this has been going on for a long time.
One thing that frustrates me in terms of the online UFO discourse on some unnamed social media platforms is everybody wants to conflate. They want to put everything in one bucket. And whether they're on the skeptical side and want to put everything in the, these are all drones, these are all surveillance aircraft, or whether they want to put them all in the bucket of these are all non-human intelligence. We have two, I see there are two big issues going on, and while they overlap, they're distinct. We have anomalous phenomena being detected in U.S. airspace, and we have what appears to be foreign, with this Chinese balloon, what is obviously foreign surveillance activities. You know, maybe some of those foreign powers are trying to leverage the current UAP wave to disguise their activities, or maybe people in the Pentagon are trying to leverage the current UAP wave to offer a counterintelligence cover for their own surveillance of foreign surveillance activities. So there's so much overlap in the language that we see the Pentagon using to describe both sets of incidents. I think we have to assume there's a little bit of overlap there, but these are two issues. There are anomalous phenomena. There are foreign surveillance efforts. It's important to be able to tease out which belong into which category, I think.
I couldn't agree more. And again, special thanks to you, Brett Tingley of Space.com, for jumping on the mic and sharing your perspectives with me here on the Micah Hanks program.
Anytime, buddy.
Again, special thanks to Brett Tingley for joining me this week and discussing this strange, sordid affair, the saga of the suspected spy balloon launched by China. And of course, for X subscribers, we'll have some additional commentary from Brett Tingley of Space.com and yours truly. But as we're wrapping things up here on the main program, what have we learned from all this? This is a unique instance where we have actually seen a somewhat unusual technology, although not necessarily a complex one when we're talking about a balloon. Despite its simplicity, it's highly effective. It does provide certain advantages, both in terms of cost and also in terms of function, that even satellites, and the most advanced ones that China has in orbit that they use to spy on the U.S., can achieve. But then it also raises some questions about the more unusual technologies that the current efforts of the DoD's All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office entail, the kinds of technologies that they are collecting information on. It's all too often said that, well, you know, these objects are strange, but let's face it, the majority of them are probably Chinese or Russian drones. Nothing to see here, all this sensational discussion about exotic technologies, UAP possibly involving space aliens and things like this. We can set that comfortably aside now, because what we've seen unfold in recent days gives us a clear idea of the kinds of things that the DoD is worried about. But to the contrary, I would actually argue that what we have really seen in recent days is that if they don't have to go to the trouble of creating extremely advanced technologies capable of surveillance, they won't. We hear about all these unusual capabilities that certain UAP display. We think about the 2004 incident involving this tic-tac-shaped object that was observed visually by multiple pilots. It was filmed in infrared and tracked using the Raytheon at-flare targeting pod. It was reportedly detected on radar numerous times, and over the course of several weeks, according to some of those reports, those radar operators, Kevin Day and Gary Voorhees, said that these objects were capable of very quickly descending or ascending from around sea level to 90,000 feet. Now, we observed a balloon in recent days hovering, at least in some instances, over parts of Montana, but mostly drifting with the wind at about 60,000 feet. The kinds of advanced capabilities that have been described in the better UAP incidents by members of the military do not seem to be a good match for the kind of thing we saw in recent days involving this suspected Chinese spy balloon. Quite the contrary, and in the great tradition of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, China showed their capabilities They sent a clear message to the United States. They engaged in blatant, unapologetic espionage with a balloon and something dangling below it. And then they called us the aggressors after we shot it down in our own airspace out of the Atlantic Ocean. They didn't have to have a Tic Tac, ladies and gents. They didn't have to have advanced drones or anything else like that. Although I don't doubt that they do have some very advanced unmanned aerial systems, and that they have a variety of other technologies they use to keep tabs on the U.S. military and its operations. None of that's surprising. The only real surprise here, maybe, is for those who expect that they have advanced technologies on par with what the best of those UAP incidents seem to entail. Maybe they do, but here, as we have seen, one of the best arguments against it is, why would they go to that trouble? Why would they spend all that money if there are indeed far more cost-effective ways that involve time-tested technologies, and simple ones at that, that can help them reach the goals they're trying to achieve? Again, here they used a balloon. They don't need some sort of an electric spacecraft that can outfox our very best fighter jets out there off the California coast, like what we saw in 2004. So, fundamentally, one of the issues we have here is that much of the modern dialogue about this, the UAP issue and the military's involvement with it, that is led by those who, A, don't necessarily have a working knowledge of the deeper history of this phenomenon, and what at times throughout history, maybe not in every instance, but at least in a few, appear to be credible observations of unexplainable technological devices in our airspace. Devices that warranted enough concern that back in the days of Project Blue Book, the U.S. Air Force spent nearly two decades trying to assess this phenomenon, and with rather limited results. If it weren't a problem, it would seem strange indeed that in recent years we would see Aero and its predecessor, the UAP Task Force, seemingly continuing that mission after several decades. There is apparently a there. But to lead with the presumption, as many seem to do, that all of these phenomena can simply be explained not only by foreign technologies, but also under circumstances like we saw in recent days, fairly simple technologies like balloons, again, people stepping outside their homes on Saturday morning here in Western North Carolina watching this Chinese balloon make its way down there to the coast, they weren't saying, look at that flying saucer. They pretty well knew at that point it was a balloon and what to look for. People armed with telescopes were easily able to get photographs of it. The most mysterious thing about it had been, well, what exactly is China using it for? They claim it's a weather device. It obviously seems quite different. It's not the kind of thing we see every day. If it were, we'd have a whole lot of pictures of similar things, right? So to wrap it all up here, what we learn from the Chinese spy balloon saga is that while many point to it and say, see, this is what the DoD is looking for when they describe UAP, I would counter and say actually quite the contrary. If anything, what this shows us is that when simple technologies are used, yes, they can be highly effective, but they also are easily recognizable. People, civilians, can spot these things from aircraft. They can see them from the ground with telescopes. And those don't seem to be the kinds of technologies that, in the better instances being described by the military, warrant attention from the Department of Defense. I think, in other words, that there's a good case to be made that there are indeed some rather peculiar technologies that are being observed in our airspace. And maybe what the great Chinese balloon controversy of 2023 helps show us is that not all of them can be explained so easily as a result of mundane technologies. But that's my take anyway. I'd like to hear from you guys as always, info@MicahHanks.com, and once again, the Twitter handle @MicahHanks. Just go online and look for my name. It's hard to miss me, in fact. Although I'll miss you guys until next week. Those of you who are ex-subscribers, you have some additional content to look forward to, as always. For the time being, that wraps up this week's broadcast. Thanks for being along for the ride. And of course, when news is happening related to UAP or otherwise, you can expect to hear it here first. Check me out online at MicahHanks.com and, of course, at thedebrief.org. And until next time, my friends, you guys, stay strange out there. We'll continue the dialogue next time here on the Micah Hanks Program.